No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So please join in the discussion by calling us at 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471, or Skype us at BBS Radio 2. As we all know, the Olympics started this week, and in an attempt to join in the fun, I did a triple klutz going out to get the newspaper on Wednesday, slipped on the ice, and ended up with several stitches in the back of my head and a concussion. Consequently, I'm not thinking as well as usual, and Kathleen is going to do most of the talking tonight, which is different from our usual format where Kathleen does most of the talking. But first, a shout out to Kathleen's goddaughter and my youngest child, Mary Brown, who turned 16 today. Happy birthday, Mary.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Mary. And you know, when I went back there, I always end up giving her a gift that you won't get her. So the first one was we pierced her ears, right? Because for earrings. Yeah. And then this last time was she got a nose piercing, which I went, and her mother, we both went and got. So is her nose doing good?
Yeah. God bless you for poking holes in my kid.
Thank God it was what they call it.
That's one of the things I like about you most. You didn't poke any holes in your kids. So you come and poke holes in my kids.
I have boys. I'm living through your daughter, not having a daughter, you know. And at least we didn't get one of those things. What do they call them? Those tramp stamp things, tattoos on the back,
thank
you know,
God.
Above
thank
their butt.
Thank
yes.
you.
You're welcome.
Well, now that you've reminded me of that, I'm going to take back the semi-automatic weapon I bought your son for my godson for his birthday.
That's right. That's right. You haven't really pierced anything of his, thank God.
Well,
that would be a little weird.
I'd also like to make a shout out to Sage Kostenberg and Jamie Anderson. Both of these people have won gold medals in what's a brand new sport, I think, in the Olympics. It's called slope style snowboarding, but we won the men's gold and the women's gold. So, way to go, guys. Go Team USA. And I have a question for you before we start, Kathleen. Is the fact that I'm an elected official and I'm having a hard time being rational right now, does that automatically make me a Republican, or do I have to fill out a form and mail it in?
Let me ask you a question. Has it affected your compassion?
No.
Okay, you're not then.
Compassionate.
Compassionate. You're still a Democrat.
Thank God.
You know, it's funny, though. I wanted to say something to Mary. I know she's 16. I cannot believe it. That's when you feel really old, when you see. I remember her as little. I remember them building that fort of snow back, I don't know, what was it, 10, 12 years ago at your house. And I just hope she had a really great birthday. Did you let her go to see the concert?
Yeah, we're going to her go if she can get a ticket. It's to see Miley Cyrus, and we're gonna it's in a few weeks, I think, so we're gonna let her go.
Good.
By the way, that was supposed to be a surprise. If you're listening, Mary, surprise.
I'll send you some money, Mary, so you can give it to your parents and go. There you go.
All right.
That'll be, well, you know, a surprise. It's not really a surprise if you give her a birthday gift 3 weeks later.
Yeah, well, that's true. No, we just haven't had the cake yet. We're going to have that after the show. So
are you?
But that's all
right. Well, listen, one of the big things that happened in Congress was the fact they did pass a farm bill, but it was a bill that had been waited for, you know, I guess they had waited on it quite a bit. It had been 2 years and supposedly trying to get to the floor for a vote. And the Republicans had been holding out for a long time and hoping that they could really, I guess, streamline the food stamp program. And I don't know if people remember, I think it was back in the summer, I actually talked to a farmer from North Dakota who actually really, I learned a lot. I didn't realize. I'd always assumed that the farm bill was basically subsidizing farmers. But 80% of that bill is for food stamps. So they did, and it depends on, you know, if you listen to the people who are like, you know, in the different food bank communities around the United States, they say that there was $8 billion trimmed from it over the next 10 years. And they're saying that's going to really affect, you know, people who are having a hard time, you know, putting food on the table. Well, if you look at the other side, it's only 1% of the bill that's actually being cut. So it's hard to say. But what I found, I came across some statistics, and I want to find them here for you, that I was pretty amazed by how much, which I think kind of signifies what's going on in our country, that actually when they compare, let's see, I'm trying to find where it was. I had it right here. That the dependency of Americans on food stamps has increased by like unbelievable amounts since like 2000. And where is it? Anyway, and I was amazed. So like it was something like about, okay, number of people receiving food stamps in 2013 is $47.6 million. It's 47.6 million people. I'm sorry. And when you compare that, I think with 2000, and that's increased since 2000. 2000 is 177% increase, because I think it was like 12 million or something like that. Million people were on food stamps. But at this time in 2013, that's how many people relied on it. This is the number of people receiving, rose from 17 million in 2000 to 26 million in 2007. And then as the recession hit, 48 million in 2013. So, you know, and I know for a fact that those 47 million people are not people who are sitting on their couches, having bonbons, and just not working. Because no matter how you cut it, you don't get a lot of money. Now, I do know people who have taken it for granted and abused the situation. But that kind of increase has got to be reflecting what's happening in our society today, that there's, what is it, one out of four kids in America are going hungry, that they may, only food they have is the breakfast that is given free at school. I mean, there's something going on. And you know, when I look at supposedly the growth that has happened, the recession, I'm not seeing that. You know, I am somebody who has worked hard all my life, always gave 200%, you know, never was fired from a job until I just recently got laid off. And I'm telling you, especially here in the state of Arizona, right to work state, it is really tough to find a good paying job. And as I read things, you know, I was reading, I got a link from Facebook to it's the Huffington Post is doing these articles called People from the Used to Haves. And these are people that have masters. You know, I've been complaining to you that I should get a master's.
Right.
These are people who have masters and can't find a job, that worked in corporate America, but because of getting laid off and downsizing, cannot find jobs. And this one woman was saying, you know, she went to Ivy League schools, she had a master's degree, worked in corporate America, got laid off, and now she simply can't find a job. And she had to go and apply for benefits. So she probably applied for food stamps so that she could feed her family. This is something that's really serious. And even though I know those people who have money in the market have seen growth, and corporate America doesn't seem to be hurting, this, maybe it's the middle class that I think is starting to vanish. And that should be a real, you know, cry out to Congress, because you need a middle class to keep the wealthy people where there used to be. And if you don't have a strong middle class, you're just setting up yourself for a revolution. And that's what her statement was. You know, the hat used to has, we're not, the poor is no longer uneducated people who don't have a will and don't know any better. The poor is becoming the educated who do know how to get things done and how to do things. So if things don't change for the middle class, things are going to be very hairy, I think, in the next, if it doesn't change in the next couple of years, it's going to be a serious situation for the United States. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, this is a subject that I happen to know a little bit about because, as you know, at one time I was the administrator for the for a public interest group, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities on Capitol Hill, and food stamps was our number one program. One thing you have to realize about food stamps is it is a subsidy for farmers because people have to buy food with it. So in the end, the farmers do get the money. There was a thing proposed, strangely enough, under Richard Nixon called the Family Assistance Plan. And the Family Assistance Plan would have given people on welfare, what we call traditional welfare, would have given them actually cash payments so they could decide what to do with the money and, you know, that they receive from the government. And that makes sense because that's what we all do. But the farm interests fought it tooth and nail because they wanted the money to go into food stamps because the money that goes into food stamps comes back to them. So you have to understand that first thing you have to understand is that food stamps is a subsidy for people that are, you know, poor people or people that are on hard times, but it's also a subsidy for farmers. And when I was at the Center on Budget, now this was 30 years ago, but we took the most extreme statistics on food stamp fraud, since you brought that up. And if you took all the worst estimates of fraud in food stamps from the beginning of the program until that point, it was not as much as the overrun on the M1 tank, which was one military weapon system right. by the Army. They ran over more on that than all the fraud that's ever taken place in food stamps. So the fraud in food stamps is pretty small. And then I think the only other thing other comment I have to make is what you said about the middle class. You know, I know when I took my one biology class, I think I cried, so the professor gave me a C. But when I took my one biology class, there are these species that kind of foretell what the future is going to be. And in an ecosystem, when they die, that's a bad sign for the rest of the ecosystem because it causes a pyramid effect. First the shrimp die, and then that which lives off the shrimp dies, and then they die. And I forget what they call the species, but in economics, I think you're right. I think it's the middle class. When the middle class dies, that's it. So I think it really is telling that the amount of food stamp recipients has gone up so dramatically.
Right.
And we know the gap is increasing between the rich and the poor in America.
Oh, you know, I have been looking for a job, and I have applied for a job that would be perfect for me here in Tucson. If they don't even call me, I don't get this job. I'm just going to live in your basement. I've decided. I'll pay you. I'll apply for food stamps and I'll give you some money for food because I just don't know what else to do because Arizona being a right to work state, it's amazing. There was a job that I didn't get called for and it was working for a conservation group in Tucson, and the amount of responsibility would be anything in the East Coast or anywhere else would probably be at least a $60,000 job. It was a $34,000 job here in Arizona. And I don't know. I mean, I was making more in the small town of Douglas. And, you know, it just amazes me. Now, there's a lot of jobs here to drive a truck or to, you know, be those people. They call them event specialists that give you food at Costco. You know, right. But the kind of jobs for people who, you know, I've done a lot. I have a good, you know, good work experience. I've been worked on presidential campaigns. I've run a lot of events, and it just shocks me how low the salaries are in Arizona compared to any other state, because it's a right to work state, which to me always just was a right to go poor. And that's what right. it really means. But, you know, when we talk about food stamps, I do know people, you know, that they claim their grandmother and they claim, you know, their cousins and all that, and they get $1,000, you know, and then they've called me and said, well, you know, do you want to give me your list for your groceries and I'll buy them for you, because they right. want the cash, because you can't, right. You used to be able to exchange them for cash or something. Can't do that anymore. And I just couldn't do it. And they said, well, you know, you don't have to pay tax. But it just, you know, it goes against everything I've ever been brought up to you know, my morals and all that. So I never would do that. But, you know, I do see, you know, one of the things I think they were trying to do was trying to reform and make some of the anti-poverty programs simpler and more live stream. But, you know, you can't touch that, because then the Democrats and liberals go crazy. It, I think, you know, having worked in Arizona or dealing with getting health insurance through the state, because I don't have any, let me tell you, I would love it if they would somehow make it easy, because it's very demoralizing. I just to get health insurance, I stayed on the phone for 4 days from 10 to 5 o'clock, and I never got through to anybody. So I'm going to probably have to go down to some office, which you say you have to take a, you know, you take a number. And if you get there, it's some people spend the night at these places because the lines are so freaking long. So in a sense, yes, you help people out, but don't make it so demoralizing and so difficult that I think people give up. At the same time, we have to have those kinds of checks and balances so that people don't abuse the system. But let me tell you, you know, I never thought I would have to go to the state for health insurance because I've been unemployed, but, you know, there's just no other way for me to do it. It's very demoralizing. So for people, for Republicans or anything that think this is such an easy thing to do, that it's just, you know, so much easier than going to work, I would much rather go to work than have to do this kind of stuff, because it's just, it's just the worst thing. It is the worst thing. It makes me almost my, you know, I want to tear up, because it is so demoralizing, so frustrating, and it's just awful. So, you know, I see now being on a position where I never thought I would ever be in my life, and seeing what people have to do, and it's not an easy thing. So anyone who says that it's easy, oh, you know, people, it's just so much easier to go on food stamps or all this stuff, it's not. It is not like that at all. And well, I, you know.
Well, I agree with you, and I think that you know the politics of it. I know the politics of it because we're here in Washington, and this stuff sells. It's, you know, I always want to say, and I think we'll move on to this in a minute, because you were talking about this earlier too, on the immigration stuff, when people sell this nonsense that people are sneaking over the border to steal your job, you know, I have yet to go and deal with an illegal alien who's a lawyer or a doctor or undocumented, you know, professional person. All the people that I know that I deal with in my day to day life, who may or may not have green cards, are cutting lawns, picking fruit,
doing dishes,
working at fast food restaurants. They're doing jobs that Americans don't want to do, American citizens. So, you know, but it doesn't, it always sells in politics to say, you're not the problem, somebody else is the problem. Yes. And it's the oldest political shill in the book. You know, one of my favorite politicians of all times was a guy named Huey Long from New Orleans. And he was governor at one time, and he was a United States senator. And he used to have his slogan used to be, every man a king. The problem with Louisiana is not that there's not enough to go around. The problem is that some people that the haves are taking it from the have-nots. And that's always been a cry on both sides. I mean, I won't be sanctimonious about it. Liberals say it too. We say we're the 1%. You know, that we're the 99%, that the 1% gets everything and the 99% gets nothing. And there's conservatives out there that are saying, look, there are people, you're a hardworking American, and they're trying to take your money and give it to people that don't do a damn thing. And that's just crazy. And if you're out there and you have that feeling, call us. Let's debate it. I'm happy to debate that with anybody, even with my concussion. I think I'll win that debate.
Let me just say one.
Right. Nobody wants to be on food stamps. Nobody does.
Nobody does. It is a terrible thing, and it doesn't feel good, and it's embarrassing. But yet, when you know you've paid into the system all this time, you've done what you're supposed to do, and yet you can't find a job, you have to get some help. And I think that's what Republicans have to wake up to, that there are more people who are middle class, who have degrees, who have master degrees, who can't find the jobs because they're still downsizing these corporations. And, you know, and I just always thought, you know, you just give 200%, you work hard, and, you know, the American dream is there for you, but it's not that way. But let's just finish up with this farm bill and saying that with a 20% of the bill, one of the complaints is that most of the money is now coming in not so much subsidies, but insurance. They've changed it. But now insurances are going to make money off of this because it's going to go through them. And the problem, they still haven't directed that help for the small farmer. You know, in North Dakota, there's huge, big corporate farms, and they keep on buying up the small guy. And then the small guy now is not even growing. He's got oil wells, you know, on his land and making so much more money than it would be to actually farm. So they're not really trying to help those small guys. A lot of these kind of subsidies or direct payments or whatever it is going to big corporate farms, which is really bad. Like, for instance, one of the things that it brought up, why do you have to make sugar out of corn? There are so many other things. That's one of the things that the government subsidized. And that's why we have all that, you know, high fructose corn syrup in all of our products that are getting us fat because our bodies can't break them down. So, you know, you wonder, is it just so complicated in D.C. that you can't just look at these with common sense and say, okay, how is this corn syrup is really a problem for everyone's health. And over the past 20, 15 years, it's showing that is one of the worst things we can consume for our body. And it makes us overweight, which causes a whole bunch of other health issues. So when does DC actually say, okay, you know, we've been doing this way for 30 years and it's totally not a good law. Why don't we go back down to the basics and start over? Or is it just too complicated? That's my question to you.
Well, you know, I think that you've got all these lobbies in place and the farm lobby is a big lobby, and they want to push subsidies for these things because they make money. And you're right, it's the big corporate farms. You know, it's funny, again, that you should bring up the farm bill, because I covered PL 480, which was the last large farm bill, I believe. It was a revamping of all the farm bills back in the 1970s when I was in graduate school. And they used to bring these little farmers in from Tennessee and other places around the country who had 1,000 acres that had been in their family for several generations, and they would talk about how the farm subsidies were so necessary. But they're not the people making money on it. The people that are making money, it's true probably that they're staying alive with those subsidies, but the people that are making money on it are the large corporate farms. There was a company called Cargill Grain. I'm sure they're still out there and viable in those days. And they estimated that one out of every 5 loaves of bread made in America at the time had Cargill Grain in it. They make billions, literally billions on farm subsidies when these little guys make very little and they just hold them up. So they just hold them up as an excuse to make that money. And, you know, that's the thing. It's all about greed in America. And unfortunately, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Look, I had a business for 25 years, which was a great business. It was a direct mail business. I went out of business because the environment changed. I raised money through the mail, and now it's much easier to raise it through the internet. So what I did was I closed my business down when it was no longer profitable. But the government didn't rush in and offer to give me any money. It didn't rush in and offer to retrain me. It didn't come forth and offer to bail me out. But you let those guys on Wall Street give sell junk bonds and give out bad mortgages, and what happens to them? They're right. Indemnified by the government. They come in and they rescue their rear ends. And exactly. So it's always the rich that get richer, unfortunately, because they can afford to lobby the government. We need to take the money out of politics. I'm sorry.
Well, I just want to back up your statement, because in The Economist, they stated that the 10 members of the House, 9 Republicans and 1 Democrat, who accepted most money from agricultural lobbyists, took an average of $225,000 in political contributions in 2013. Now, that's amazing. That's why, you know, the farm bill is the way it is.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? And so, you know, it's interesting too, because I think they talked about the fact that they did try to take out the very wealthy from getting these subsidies. And some of the ones, the most famous people who got subsidies was David Rockefeller. I guess he owns, you know, famous recipients of farm subsidies were David Rockefeller, Jimmy Carter, and Bruce Springsteen. That was like based on 2011 statistics. But, wow. You know, that was the other big thing, that a lot of, you know, wealthy people, you know, bought into farms and get subsidies. There's no reason any of these guys should have gotten any subsidies.
Well, you know, that's another thing. You bring up Jimmy Carter. You and I work for Carter.
Right.
And back in those days when we were at the DNC, I can't remember how much money we spent on the presidential election. But I think the presidential election in 1980, we spent somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 million on the Democratic side. Obama spent over $1 billion, over $1 billion.
Right.
Dollars. That's 20 times as much in that short period of time. I mean, it's just amazing. And I'm sure that in a few years, they'll be spending $2 billion each. We got to get the money out of politics. That would change things so dramatically in America, I believe. And the only way we can do it is by passing laws to actually do it. Because you're not gonna get politicians to turn down the money. I run for elected office, and I can tell you, the guy that ran against me last time spent $20 for every dollar that I spent.
Right.
And it's hard when you know you're being outspent 20-1. It's hard in fact, he spent more than that. I think he spent almost 50-1. He spent $211,000 against me in the primary. And it's hard if somebody comes to you and offers you a contribution to turn it down when you know that you're being outspent like that.
Right.
I fortunately am not well liked enough to have anybody offer me money.
Because they know they can't corrupt
right. You.
That's
or all the people I know are poor. I don't know what it is, but very few people offer to give me money. But you know, but it would be tough to turn it down. I understand that. But so we can't regulate ourselves. It's kind of like putting a bunch of 5-year-olds in a room full of candy and saying, "Now don't eat any of this because
right.
It's bad for you." They're just not going to be able to help themselves, and that's how politicians are. And
well,
we need to do it.
We talked about this. I mean, there had been a movement at one time to try to make the playing field fairer by giving politicians on both sides equal time during prime time to right. have commercials or the, all that kind of stuff. And then I don't know whatever happened to that. That just seemed to go away. But we've talked about it. You know, when Koch here in Arizona spends billions of dollars on advertisement to still on the anti-Obama healthcare. I mean, they're still running these commercials all the time, all day long, about how bad Obamacare is for you. Why can't those guys, the constant, you know, the U.S. Congress and I'm sorry, the Supreme Court said it was constitutional. There's nothing, it's law. Why can't they spend that money on something more beneficial, like trying to retrain people or create jobs for the middle class? I mean, and you got to know, if they're doing it in Arizona, they're doing it in all the red states, and they're gearing up for the mid election, you know, the midterm elections. And it just astounds me. I really don't think that that's good for America.
Well, you know, and that's the thing that people have to understand. They're not doing it because they're great Americans. That's the way they're portrayed. They're not out there spending this money, and it works on both sides again. I don't want to just vilify the Republicans. We get money from unions and on the liberal side, on the Democratic side, and from liberal causes. These guys are not out there spending the money because it's not doing anything for them. They're getting something for it. And let me tell you something. If somebody contributes $1 million to your campaign, some organization, and the legislation comes up before you that will benefit them, there's no way you're going to stand up and say no. You're going to say yes, because you understand that your fate and their fate are tied together. And that's why we need to get the money out. But again, we need to do that.
Well, that's true. And so anyway, that's the kind of thing. The Farm Bill was something that it surprised me how much of it was towards food stamps, but how really, when you think about it, how little of it goes to help the small farmer, who to me is the backbone of America also. You know, it's not Monsanto who's selling their chemicals for Let me tell you, that's just a crazy what those chemicals are. And I do understand the need for them, but my God, there is a whole nother side to that too. And, you know, one thing that I'd like us to get into is this whole genetic modifying our food.
Yeah.
That's good. We don't even know what's going to happen to us. And anyone who says that they do, they don't. We're not going to know what it does to us, like how we found out what corn syrup does to us, until about 20 or 30 years, and it might be too freaking late.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to take a little break now and play a song picked by my colleague here for all us poor people out here on the East Coast that are suffering and slipping and sliding around on the ice and banging
and
their
hitting
head.
Their heads. That's right. Yeah. I thought it's 75 here in Arizona, but listen, we'll pay for it probably in the summer because we're in a drought, but it's 75 degrees right now. Freaking beautiful. I was in California last weekend, which was beautiful. So this song is for all your East Coast people who are freezing.
Okay, here's the Mamas and the Papas, and we'll be back in just a minute.
California Dreaming.
And we're back with Kathleen leading the way. So what's up next, Kathleen?
I just want to say that I'm not glad you got a concussion, but that probably was the first time you let me talk for about 3 minutes straight and not interrupting.
Oh, my
God. So I don't know. I mean, maybe in the next year or two, I might have to just, you know, hit you over the head with a bat.
It's
3 minutes.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
And, you know, Kathleen was talking about the job she applied for. If it's a job telling everybody what to do, please give her the job, because she's an expert. She is an expert at telling everybody what to do.
Yes, that's true. I am. And it's true. I do. Like, I told my son, you know, he needed another pair of sneakers, but he only likes the Nike that like are $180. I almost keeled over. I went to Foot Locker, $180 for a tennis shoe, and the one he wanted had like lightning on it, and one looked like it was pink and salmon with flowers. And I was like, "You gotta be kidding me!" So I said, "Look, I'm gonna take you to the Nike outlet store." Oh no, they're not. Oh, I can't buy shoes. You know what? Took him there, and my gosh, for $180, he bought two pairs of shoes and a soccer bag so he can, you know, ride his bike, put his ball and all that. And we still had money to burn. So, yeah, I do know a lot. I just wish my sons and that hopefully the other one, Diego, is listening because he's at my mom's and she's probably making him, that I do know what I'm talking about. So there.
Well, let me send out a message then to Diego. I fought your mother for a long time, Diego, and I finally lost. So save yourself the trouble and give up and just do what she wants. Okay?
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. And get something pierced. One other thing. Get something pierced and send me the bill because I'll pay for it.
Well, I was thinking, well, the next time I go there, you better hope I don't come back for a couple of years because what else are we going to do? She's pierced.
We're
going to
hide her. Next time you come home, we're going to hide her somewhere so you don't find her.
That's
so what's
right.
Next up?
We've talked about immigration. Immigration reform. You know, everyone's really shocked that in a way that the immigration reform is not going to come up this year. And, you know, I've been reading on it, and it makes perfect sense why it doesn't. First of all, you got midterm elections, and the base of the Republican Party wants no talk of any kind of pathway to legalization, especially not citizenship. And, you know, that's their base. So they're not going to want to do anything that does anything other. Yet at the same time, they can't be seen as being completely against any kind of path to legalization because the Hispanic power base is increasing. And if they come out too strong against it, then they may not, you know, they've got Hispanic population in their states, which at this time, I probably wouldn't be wrong in saying that at least, you know, you've got some Hispanic base in whatever district you're looking across the United States.
Well, you know, and it pains me because last week when it looked like the Republicans, when Bonner came out and talked about immigration, it looked like they were ready to move forward. I even said some very nice things about them. And, you know, it's hard for me to say nice things about Republicans, but it looked like they were going to move. And, yeah, it's terrible that they're not going to move on this. This is such a big issue, and it's such an important issue. And you know, as well as I do, that when you don't want to go on record, when a vote comes up and you don't want to go on record of being against something or being for it, you abstain. And that's what the Republicans are doing right now. They're abstaining. They're not going to be for it. They're not going to be against it because they don't want to move it for the reasons that you just said. And unfortunately, we're still going to have millions and millions of people trapped in the middle because these guys are being cowardly. You know, that's half our problem. I love the fact that this week Republicans stood up like Rand Paul and Bonner and said that the president is trying to subvert the Constitution because he's talking about, using his executive privilege to pass laws. And that's not what's supposed to happen. There's supposed to be a balance of power. Well, you know what? I agree with you guys, but there's no balance in Washington these days. All there is gridlock. And that's why the president of the United States has this power. George Bush used more executive orders than Obama has. And if you guys will get up off your ass and do something and move something, he wouldn't be in the position of having to do things by executive fiat. It really bothers me.
Well, I just am reading something that was written by Chris. I don't know if I'm saying it right. Silesia from The Fix. And this was in the Washington Post and Politics. And actually, he's saying that one of the things too, that a lot of Republicans, they consider if you have 25% Hispanic population in your base, that that's a real issue. And there's not that many Republicans that have it. But I would really like to see the statistics on I mean, I bet you there's a good five at the minimum in a lot of these, and I guess you wouldn't be able to know because they're not documented, but everywhere I've gone in North Dakota, other places, you know, I'm always shocked at hearing Spanish spoken, you know. Now, you know, I have an issue with just the whole thing of legalizing, because it's a really hard thing, because I really feel for those people who did it the right way. You know, there was a young girl or a young woman in Douglas, to say, who did it the right way. 14 years it took her to get she had, I guess, visa, but to actually become a citizen. She couldn't leave the country to go visit anybody who might have died, had a wedding, had a birthday, because once she did that, then she would have to start the process all over. I had a good friend who left back to Germany because there was no way. He had been working hard, paying taxes, even though he was undocumented, and he went back because there was just no way he could even get on the rolls to become a citizen. So I think that, and I don't understand why nobody speaks about this group, the ones who did it legal, and at least say everybody who's done it legal. We're going to make the pathway for 11 million people. They should be right up at the front. Everyone who started to do it the legal way should immediately get it. But you don't hear anybody talk about those guys. And I feel real strongly that, you know, what are we saying? We're saying, okay, we're going, even if you come here illegally, we're going to eventually give you amnesty because we've done it over the past 100 years quite a few times, you know? And yet at the same time, I know kids, some of the nicest kids, go to my son's school, and their visa just ran out. You know, visas are very expensive in Mexico. They increased it a lot. And yet these are the kids that I want to be Americans, because they treasure being an American citizen and living in this country. They don't want to go back to Mexico. And I think they actually have a love for America more than kids who have been born here and they're, you know, their fifth or sixth generation. So it's a really, really difficult issue. And but it has to be addressed. And you have to start doing it, because if you don't put something, it's just going to be more people. And maybe not. Maybe with the recession, a lot of people have left because they can't make the money here. And because the laws, you know, Tucson, they do raids, and they now are going after the employers. So it's a very complex situation, you know. And I feel for those children. I don't think necessarily sending them back, even if they're born in the United States and their parents aren't, they are American citizens. Yet at the same time, you know, I know living on the border, people would come across just to have their babies born in the United States. So, you know, it's a very, very tough thing, but we have to start talking about it because it's not going to get any easier.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, people are coming to America today for the same reason that everybody in the history of our country has come, for a better life. You know, we all act like we're from royalty, right? My Italian grandparents came through Ellis Island. This was my mother's mother and father, you know, and we all act like they were sitting around, you know, living the life in Italy. And they said, oh, you know, let's just go to America and see what it's like. That's not what happened. They were poor. They were starving. That's why the Irish came. That's why the Italians came. That's why the Poles came. The Jews came after the Second World War, after they had been persecuted and their populations decimated in Europe. So we've all come to America for exactly the same reason. And if you're not a Native American, in my opinion, you do not have a historical claim to America. You're as much of somebody that whose family started here for the same reason that every family starts here. So that's the first thing. I think we need to understand that these are good, hardworking people that are coming to America for a better life. It's not easy to uproot. And, you know, how many of us live in the areas in which we were born? Because our families are there, our roots are there, we feel a sense of community. And I don't think we have that mentality. I think a lot of people, because they're whipped up into a frenzy by idiots like Rush Limbaugh. If you're out there and you listen to Rush Limbaugh, I dare you to call into this show because he may be the dumbest person on the damn planet. You know?
I hate to tell you this, but anybody who's listening to us probably wouldn't, because we would just be too far off the wall for him. So I mean, don't know if we're going to get that.
Here's a guy that has 15 million listeners every day, has a high school education, is a hypocrite who used to trash people that had drug problems until he started taking Oxycontin like it was going out of style. He's a bigot and he's an idiot, and America listens to him, and I just don't get it. He whips people up into a frenzy over this stuff. We need to work together to solve these problems, and until we stop vilifying people that don't agree with us, I guess I just did that with Rush, but until we stop vilifying people on large groups of people, I don't think we'll ever solve this problem.
Well, maybe that's why we'll never get 15 million people, because we don't necessarily just take one side. I mean, you and I disagree, but we also know people call – I mean, you did call Rush Limbaugh an idiot, but usually we don't. Usually we see that everybody – has something to give in the conversation, and they have a right to have their opinion. And we just got to figure out our common ground. And we've done that. I mean, we did it with the Constitution Party, right, the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, the Republican Party, although we did have a moderate Republican. I just wish the Republicans would grow more moderate politicians. They used to have quite a few of them, and they don't anymore. They must have taken them out and shot them in the back, you know, the backyard.
Right, and one of the best ones was from Arizona, Barry Goldwater.
Yeah,
you know,
yes.
That's right. And the thing that I loved about Barry Goldwater is that Barry Goldwater on day one and Barry Goldwater at the end of his political career was the same guy. Yeah. You know, he was consistent in his beliefs. You know, my home state of New Jersey had people like Millicent Fenwick.
Yes, my God.
Yeah, who was an amazing person. You know, and
she was a Republican, for those youngins that don't know, and she was a great lady. She was unbelievable. She was really good.
And now we have Chris Christie, you know,
yeah,
and Chris Christie, you know, that's what pains me about him, because I think he's a moderate voice in the Republican Party. But, you know, when you cheat and you know, that's the problem that we have in politics. We have so much corruption going on in our government that it's terrible. Here in Washington, yet again today, yesterday we had a judge who's a local judge who's accused of taking $40,000 in bribes. Today in the Washington Post, the other Michael Brown — I used to be the other Michael Brown, but the other Michael Brown was in the paper for this guy, Jeff Thompson, giving him $100,000 under the table. So, you know, it just goes on and on.
And let me just say this, that when you ran, they gave you so much grief. And I was working in your campaign, you know.
That's right.
Towards when I was out there, the things that they said, the things that they called you, if it was reversed, if you as a white guy was saying that about him, you would have been hung for being a bigot. But right. Yet the reverse discrimination, I could not believe. I just could not believe it. It still makes me angry to this day what they did to you. I mean, if for people who don't understand, Michael Brown was the son of Ron Brown, who we worked with at the DNC, was, I think, a great politician, a wonderful guy. This guy, remember, I worked for him for a while, and if he saw me 10 years later, he remembered me, never flinched. I mean, he made me feel important. He was a good guy. He was very honest. He definitely had, you know, he was on the right track. He was what a politician should be. And his son is how much younger than you? At least 30 years?
10 years, 12 years maybe.
Younger than
you?
Yeah. And because you were Michael A. Brown, correct?
No, I'm Michael
D. Brown.
Oh, you're
Michael D. Brown. Sorry.
He's Michael A.
He's Michael A. Brown. They claimed that you were using that what was it that you were using your name or his name?
Right.
How did they frame it?
That people were confused, that they thought they were voting for him when they were voting for me, even though in the end we were both on the same ballot and he got 50-some thousand votes and I got 207,000 votes. And let me just say publicly that Kathleen helped me. She worked on my campaign. I got 207,000 votes. And we did a poll afterwards that showed that I would have gotten 240,000 votes. She hadn't worked on my campaign.
Because I was angry at everybody. I was telling them. I was calling them racist because that's what they were. No, I didn't do that. But you're not being honest. But we did go into, you know, and there were some great, great people. But I couldn't believe the campaigns that they ran against you. And it was just awful. But now look at what this guy did. I mean, this guy is taking how much money?
He took $55,000 in bribes from the FBI, and now they say $100,000 was spent under the table on his last campaign. But, you know, just to end the story about the racist campaign they ran against me, I'd like to say that the ward that I did the best in Washington, D.C., was the ward that's most heavily African American. And that's the good news. I think that African Americans were so used to having that trick played on them that they turned around and said, we're not going to stand for them persecuting this white guy because he's white. So they stood up for him. In the end, the black voters stood up for me, and I think that's the really good news about the whole thing is they didn't fall for one of the oldest tricks in the book.
Right, and then you said it. You got 207,000 votes, and he got 50. So, I mean, right there, that's the proof. But you've always been, and I hate to sit there and build you up, but it's true. You are a very honest guy. And you've never taken anything, and I'm amazed you asked your friends to give money and stuff like that, but you ran your campaign on what? How much money?
It was a few thousand dollars. The guy that ran against me in the primary spent $211,000, and I spent $5,000. And I think that shows you that you can take the money out of politics.
You can.
You can. It's not all about money.
But it was hard
work.
But
you got to do it.
You went to every meeting that there was in every ward, and that's not easy to do.
I tortured my wife and my friends. I made them put up signs for me and pass out literature. And it's not easy. And Washington, D.C., just to be honest with everybody, is a city that's less than 10 miles square. So, you know, that's not like running. You wouldn't be able to do it in a state like Arizona or California or Texas where, you know, if you're running in a statewide race because there's just too much territory to cover. You need to get contributions from people. But if the federal government were to fund elections – it would cost a lot of money, but you know what? In the end, we'd have a better system, a more honest system, a fairer system. And if you take the money out of politics, you'll get better politicians.
Yeah, I think you would too. And it's funny. It's one of the things that probably the government isn't involved in that really should be. You know, if they would just set these standards to make a fair playing field that everyone has the same time, that everyone is talking at the same, you know, market or whatever in prime time, then I think people would, A, be more attentive because people get sick of the constant commercials on these political campaigns that are just awful, you know? And I think it wears people out and they just don't even want to deal with it by the time it comes to vote.
Well, you know, and it's something that you said earlier about we've had a Republican and a Libertarian and you know, people from the Green Party. We've had all these people on our show, and I think you and I have found out that there's a lot of common ground there that we never see in an election because people don't talk about the commonality. They try to vilify each other. And I think that you would see more of the commonality in people and there would be more compromise if they didn't feel the necessity to attack each other with these attack ads and with people like the Koch brothers, you know. And there are people on the liberal side that do the same thing. But if we got their money out of politics and we had an honest debate. Now, politics has never been clean in America. You know, it's never been a friendly pursuit. It's certainly an adversarial. We like to say it's a contact sport. And you can go back to in history, one of the more famous incidences was Andrew Jackson, whose wife had a heart attack just before they went into the White House because she was so vilified in the press. They said that she was an adulterer because she had been married for one day to a cousin, and the marriage was never conceived or anything.
Consummated.
But consummated, thank you. But they called her an adulterer, and they harangued her, and Jackson never got over it. He hated the press for that, and so it's never really been a friendly pursuit. But we could certainly take some of the rancor and a lot of the corruption out of it if we got rid of the money.
That's right. You know, we're almost up with out of time. And one of the things I want to talk about maybe next time or in the near future is this whole thing of body image. You know, I came across something that was very interesting done at a spa or at a, you know, one of the gyms. And it said, it asked women, you know, what would you rather be, a mermaid or a whale? And there was this answer by this woman who is beautiful, but she's probably just a plus-size model. And I'd like to sometime maybe address what women go through and how instead of getting better, it's getting worse. I have my little niece at 8, you know, who's wondering if she looks too fat. You know, I see all the photoshopping. I also know these models and stuff who airbrush themselves to the point where they're beyond perfect. They're even more than perfect. Yet to see them, you wonder, okay, you don't look like that in that picture. And I think that this is something else that's a real sickness in the United States, is this, you know, unimaginable, this kind of image of what women should be. We will never be those women. And if you would stop photoshopping every picture, and there was something that I saw where it showed a regular woman, and then after she photo, you know, they stretch the neck, take the waist longer.
No, it was Jennifer. It was Jennifer. Jennifer Lawrence. Who? How could you be much more gorgeous than that to begin with? But yeah, they tucked in her waist. They lengthened her neck. I mean, it's just amazing. If Jennifer Lawrence isn't good enough physically, nobody is.
That's right.
And I'd like to go on record as saying I have never airbrushed. What you see is what you get with me.
Well, I remember that one picture they had of you. You got little beady eyes, right? And all that stuff. Well, one of the other the campaigns had of you on their posters, like you were a weasel. Yeah, that's true. You never have airbrush, and I admire you for that.
Yeah. I just naturally look like Brad Pitt. Some of us get lucky. Well, we'll be back next week, folks. I'm going to let Kathleen have the final word, but we'll be back next week, and hopefully we'll have a guest to interview.
Yeah, we have several people that we'd like to interview, maybe on education, and there's quite a few different prospects. But it's always fun talking to you, Michael, especially, I hate to admit this, but with that concussion, I feel like I got my airtime. So maybe, you know, I want you to get better, and I want you to come back 100%, but I definitely had a good time tonight.
All right. Well, good. Well, we'll hear more from you in the future. And if necessary, I'm willing to bang my head against the wall.
And another shout out to Mary Brown. Turning 16 is huge. That's a huge benchmark. I don't know what it really does, but it definitely is a big deal. So I hope you treat your daughter good and let her have something extra tonight from me.
Okay.
Whatever, an extra piece of cake.
All right. Well, we'll let her pierce something at the dinner table.
That sounds good. Sounds good. All right. Thanks, America, for listening to us.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. Thank you.
In the capital of this nation. exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.